It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. It's hard to believe the week is going by very, very quick, and I want to bring in my buddy, my brother from a different mother, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
Still on the man. How you doing?
I got a song for you. It's not funny, but the lead singer of the Jay Giles Band, Peter Wolf, went out on his own, and I think it was 1984, and guess what the song title was?
I'm not sure.
Lights Out. Okay. I've been waiting all night for that one.
Yeah, so. Well, the power's back on now, so.
Okay, good.
See how long it lasts. Two nights in a row. Love power. Ridiculous.
Yeah, you can have Candle in the Wind, like Elton John.
Indeed.
Candles in the Rain, Melanie. Well, okay, I'll stop. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, man? You're my other brother from a different mother.
Yeah, doing well, guys. I hope you guys are having a good week. Looking forward to talking about the Pirates. Of course, the American Athletic Conference media days are going on up in Rhode Island, so we'll look forward to talking about that.
Yeah. By the way, guys, before we forget, this is a very important moment of the podcast. Before we forget, today, we're recording this on Wednesday night. Today, Wednesday, you won't believe this. I just want to wish you guys a happy Emoji Day. It's a 6th annual happy Emoji Day. So do you guys, before we start, do you have a favorite emoji?
Yeah, the laughing crying face. That one is the one I go to the most.
Okay, what about you, Bubba? You always give me the thumbs up. It seems like your favorite emoji.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if that's necessarily my favorite. It's probably my most used one, as you said. If I had to pick one, I'd have to go with the skull and crossbones flag.
Oh, nice. The pirate reference, yeah.
Yeah, the Jolly Roger.
I'm going to go with the poop, because that's what we dealt with the last 3 years, so I'll go with the seems like I've used that poop emoji a lot. So you're talking about the media days, very excited. Very excited about football, very excited about the very fact that we're going to be playing in less than 2 months, and we're going to be on the gridiron again, and we have high school coming up and football coming
Look,
up in about
Dave,
a month.
Dave, I prefer to say it like this. We're going to be playing next month.
All right,
makes it sound closer.
There you go. August 31st, I'll take it. Yeah. And let me tell you something, guys. I'm feeling cocky, and I have not been drinking, but I will tell you, I'm feeling better and better about our program every day, and I'm feeling better about our chances in Raleigh. I didn't feel that way, say, 30 days ago, but I'm feeling better based on what I'm hearing inside the Ward building, what I'm hearing around the program. They feel a lot more confident than they did up until recently, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of our chances in Raleigh, I don't know. We're going to have to see how much we've come along this last year. As Coach Houston said at American Athletic Conference Media Days on his interview with ESPN, it's going to be a good way to tell where we are in game one and how far we have to go to get to where we want to be. You know, NC State, they lost some players sitting on the offensive side of the ball, but they got a good program. Coach Dorn's recruited well. So whether we'll win or not in NC State, I don't know. But it is a good test in game one. And I'm trying to look at this NC State game, guys, not like maybe some of the other ones where you're so emotionally involved that, God, we got to win this game because it's NC State. And obviously those emotions are still going to be there. But I'm trying to look at it as we're playing a solid ACC team that went to a bowl last year, and we're coming off of terrible season, and we're rebuilding with a new head coach. And if we can go up to Raleigh and be in the game, be competitive, I'll come off not happy, because I'm never happy losing to NC State, but feeling optimistic about our chances to get to 6 this year.
Absolutely, I agree. Certainly no moral victories, but if we go up there and we compete and you see a product that is not only competitive, but just the way we go about our business and the way we do in certain little things within the game, you'll be able to tell the direction we're headed, win or lose.
Yeah, you know, with media days going on in Newport, Rhode Island, I'm curious to know how long they're going to keep them up there. I know there's some talk about moving the conference office out of Rhode Island. It's in what, Providence, Rhode Island, I believe, still. And there's some talk about moving it down to Texas. And so I wonder, at some point you would think it would be moved out of that area. It doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't really make any sense anymore for the conference offices to be up there. I wonder if Media Day would still stay in that area. Everybody seems to really love it up there. It's a beautiful site for Media Day. It certainly beats the hell out of a stuffy conference room in a hotel.
Yeah, that's actually something that I heard, Kyle, that I'm trying to remember if it's Brian Bailey, who flew up there for the Media Days, as he often does. And he was saying that it's so successful and they like it so much there in Newport that even with the conference office moving to Texas, that they'll continue to have the AAC Media Days in Newport, Rhode Island. So don't be surprised to see that going forward.
Yeah, and there's no reason why it can't. I mean, your conference office doesn't have to be where your Media Days are. Obviously, the SEC Media Days, and I don't know if you know this, Bubba, but the SEC Media Days are going on. I didn't know if you knew that.
Not at all. I hadn't heard it any. It has not been all over social media or anything. So.
No. And I don't think you have satellite radio, but if you turn into ESPN College Sports Nation on SiriusXM, they will make you throw up with the SEC. It's not as bad as it was at one time, because they do have a dedicated channel for the SEC now, 24 hours a day. But still on College Sports Nation, even they just shove it down your throat. And look, I know the SEC is the SEC, and it's the biggest dog in the yard, and I get it. But my God, I mean, you know, there are other conferences that are having media days, and it's a circus down there.
I was going to ask you, Kyle. I've seen snippets. I've seen a few clips of Coach Houston's remarks up in Newport. But I know you had the opportunity to see his comments in their entirety. So, was there anything that stood out to you?
Well, I watched the ESPN interview. If you go to the ESPN app, they have an entire, I don't know if it's 1 or 2 hour show of American Athletic Conference Media Day. And I watched the interview on there with Coach Houston. Nothing stood out really. He mentioned about NC State being a good way to see where we are as a program to open the season. He talked about Holt Naylor being a talented quarterback, but everybody needs to keep in mind he is just a sophomore. What else stood out to me? Said, you know, that he believes East Carolina is a gold mine. That we've talked about the success in the past and knows it can be done here, and talked about, you know, how Dowdy Ficklin can be filled up and rocking, but nothing newsworthy. No, it was just a typical, I don't want to say typical interview, because we haven't had that many interviews with Mike Houston yet, but nothing stood out of the ordinary. There was nothing newsworthy.
Right. So it was largely, not completely, but largely what we've heard over the last, I guess, what, 7.5 months now. One of the things that I saw on social media that was newsworthy and was something that Ronnie Woodward from the Daily Reflector put out there on Twitter, and that was that during the off season we had the opportunity to acquire transfer quarterback, I guess coming out of spring ball, they had seen enough out of Holt Naylor and Reed Herring that they were pleased with where things stood. And we opted to not bring in that quarterback transfer, and they did not specify who that was.
Yeah, that's something I go, or either Mark Lindsay needs to jump on and try to find out who that was. I'd like to know, just out of pure curiosity, who it was, what program they were from, if it was somebody who had started somewhere else, or you probably not. It's probably a guy who had been waiting his turn and wanted to play. Who knows? I think that indicates a lot also that they want to keep Reed. I think Reed, you know, got a lot of eligibility left. He showed he can play at the beginning of the year last year. And, you know, with somebody that actually maybe knows how to coach quarterbacks here now and manage quarterbacks, it'll be interesting to see. I think had you brought in a transfer, Bubba, what you would have probably seen is Reed Herring transfer out because, you know, he would have known right then. Obviously, you're bringing in a grad transfer that Holton is going to be the starter or either the backup, and the grad transfer is going to be the starter in the back or the backup. So,
right.
Houston made a good decision if he wants to keep Reed here, and clearly he does. But that is it is interesting to hear that, and I'd love to find out who it was.
Yeah, as would I. And very quickly on Reed Herring. Reed Herring, obviously, that was his first game action, pretty much last year. I mean, first consistent game action. Unfortunately, because there were opportunities where he had had a chance to play in the past, but we had elected not to play him for whatever reason. But so I think early on in the season, the first third or first half of the season, he performed very well, at least in spurts. There was a little inconsistency there that you would expect to see with an inexperienced quarterback, excuse me. But and then toward the latter half of the season, once he would get a periodical playing time, I mean, things were such a cluster at that point that you really can't hold that against him. But he didn't have a snowball's chance with our lack of a running game and the way we weren't protecting the passer.
Yeah, and Montgomery did a terrible job managing quarterbacks. But when you look at the guys we had under Montgomery, Gardner Minshew was a Heisman Trophy candidate this year, and you know he benched him. Help me out here, Bubba, the kid from Minnesota.
Philip Nelson.
Philip Nelson, hell of a talent. Played in the Alliance of American Football this year, started out there. And he benched him for Minshew, and then benched Minshew for Thomas Zirk, who was a fraction of the player he was when he was at Duke. I mean, just so you – you can't judge too much about the way he played. Bubba, I got my smoke alarm going off here. You manned the wheel here for a second or either. Okay, it went off. Okay. I don't know why my smoke alarm keeps going off, but anyway, it went off. Dave can either edit it out or leave it in for some dramatic feel.
But I think now we'll certainly come back and talk a little more Pirate football and talk about the AAC media poll and then also the bowl games that the AAC have on the docket for 2020 through 2025. But right now we have a couple of great guests tonight. The first of those, I know our female audience is really going to spike tonight, Kyle, and that's because right now we're going to catch up with Steve, the Pirate Wetzel, who is going into now his second decade of leading the Pirates through the Purple Haze. And let's talk to Steve right now.
Well, one of the biggest things of the football season, certainly when it comes to Pirate Nation and being at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, is certainly our next guest, right, Bubba?
Yeah, Dave, it really is. And when you think about the East Carolina football game day experience, one of the first things, probably the first thing that most people think of is Purple Haze. And the guy that's been leading the Pirates through the Purple Haze for more than a decade now, I believe he's going into his 11th year, is Steve Wetzel, or as a lot of people know him, just simply Steve the Pirate. Steve, welcome in.
Ahoy and good morning to you. How you doing?
We're doing great. We're so excited, and I know people think I say this a lot, but you're one of the people that we've been wanting on for what, Bubba, at least a year since last July, I think.
Yeah, we've been in talks with Steve and just our schedules and different things. It never worked out, but we're very excited to have him on now.
Our agents couldn't get things worked out, and so we finally worked out a deal.
Working out correctly, that's the best way to go.
All right. I know that certainly there must be bigger names on the other line or whatever, but seriously, Steve, we're so excited to have you on. And definitely, I guess the best way to get started is, can you talk about how did this whole thing, Steve the Pirate, how did the Pirate the whole thing. How did it come? How did it start? What was the genesis?
Well, I'm an actor in Raleigh, so I've been doing theater for about 20 some years. And I'm a member of the Shadow Player Stage Combat Group. We do live sword fighting shows up and down the East Coast, and I've been doing that since about 2000, 2001. And, for years, we just travel up and down the East Coast doing our shows, and we got hired to do the Greenville Pirate Fest. I think it was our first year was probably back in 2000 and probably 4 or 5, and we had been doing it up, for a few years then, and Denise Walsh, who was the coordinator at the time, back in 2009, she called me up and said, hey, they're looking for a new mascot at ECU. And I thought, okay, I could do that. So she hooked me up with the guys in the marketing department, and I made an appointment, just went to the stadium, had my gear and everything, and everything I have that I wear is all mine. I mean, this is what I've been wearing for years. So I kind of dressed it up a little bit, put some purple and gold on it, and put the sash on and did some stuff, and came out of the bathroom and did the pose, and they said, okay, you're hired. So that was kind of the genesis for that. So that was back in 2009, and you're right, this is my 11th year, the 10th season, and I'm happy to be here, man. It's a lot of fun. When I first started doing it, I really, had kind of lost contact with a lot of my ECU friends, because, I live in Raleigh. I grew up in Raleigh. I went to state back in 1980, and I went in the Air Force in 83, so I was kind of away for a while and kind of lost contact with a lot of people, but it kind of rekindled my friendships with a lot of people at ECU. So I was happy to come back and just, to be a part of Eastern North Carolina and in East Carolina. So it was a lot of fun, man. It's the best job in the world. Everybody asks me, man, how do you like doing that job? And I'm like, man, it's the best feeling of being able to walk out on the field, 50,000 screaming Pirate fans, man. There's nothing like it.
One of the questions I had, Steve, was the very fact of, can you tell any, obviously people are wondering, are there any crazy stories that maybe you wouldn't share normally that you could kind of give us breaking news, behind the scenes kind of stuff that has happened to you?
Well, I mean, there's not really crazy stuff. I mean, it's a lot of, I've met a lot of really cool fans and a lot of cool people. I got to meet the governor one time. He came back down in the locker room, and I got my picture with him, and just walking around, at the tailgate, I can't go in garb because I wouldn't be able to make it back to the stadium. But there's just a lot of the friends walking around, going over to Pirate Radio and going to the different tailgate venues and things like that. I remember that one time, though, the one thing that stands out, I don't know if you remember back when Ruff was there, when he actually tripped over my sword when he came out of the
Yeah, and that's one I was actually going to bring up.
Yeah, it was at the time, I think it was the second or third year he was there, and revved up guy when he came out of that tunnel, but he wanted to just get out there and get on the field. Well, usually they have someone that's in the tunnel on a headset, waiting for the timing, for everything with the music and the TV and everything. So they give me a pat on the shoulder and tell me when to go out. Well, that one time, when I stab my sword in the ground, I take my hat and I usually throw it. Well, this time there were some kids over to the side, so I went over to walk over and put my hat on someone's head, and I turned back, and the smoke, it hadn't dissipated. It was like a fog, and I couldn't see anything. So I'm stumbling around, and finally, I'm getting run over by all these players and everything. And what I didn't know at the time was that Ruff had come out early. He wasn't supposed to come out that early. He's come storming out of the skull there and kind of tripped over the sword, and it was a little bit of embarrassment for him. And I apologized to him the next game. I said, hey, I'm sorry, man. Because he took a lot of ribbing for that, so. But that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I was kind of panicked. So every now and then, from now on, I don't leave the sword in the field. I pick it up as soon as I can. So.
I remember Coach Ruff talking about that. He said, "Hey, yo, bro, you got to get that sword out of the ground."
Well, again, like I said, it wasn't my fault.
Oh gosh,
should have come out that early. So, but it was fun. It kind of let us have a laugh about it. And like I said, he took a lot of ribbing from the press on that one. But, you know, the thing about, you know, when I throw my hat, that is kind of stems from the first season. I took a lot of grief because, you know, on a lot of the message boards, which I shouldn't have read, you know, you never read your critics. They were saying, hey, you know, that's not it's not a really pirate hat. It's more of a Cavalier hat. And then everybody was kind of complaining about it. So, I was like, okay, so I'll just take it and I'll just chuck it, you know. So, and it works out too, because running down the field, you know, the hat, I don't want it to come flying off and then just have someone trip over it. So it's kind of, it helps when I throw the hat out into the ether there for let someone catch it. So that, and they always like that too. A lot of the fans like it when I throw the hat and they can catch it. And then when I come back around to the other side, I can gather it up. And so it's a lot of fun.
Steve, yeah. One of the questions I had was, certainly I feel like having you on this podcast, our current one, the female listenership is going to go way up. Do you have have you had the female fans that are right now, or anything crazy? Have they done anything crazy to you? Obviously, it's a family show, but.
No, it's. I mean, it's nice to be, you know, appreciated that way. A lot of the guys are like, hey, you know, why don't you bring some a female out there too? And I was like, okay, you know, we could do that. And, you know, maybe we'll talk them into having a female pirate out there someday too. But yeah, it's flattering. You know, and I was like, hey, you know, a lot of these fans, you know, they don't know how old I am. I'll be 57 this year, and they're like, you know, and a lot of the younger co-eds will come up and go, oh, my grandmother loves you. I'm like, okay.
Put your teeth back in, Grandma.
Exactly. but yeah, like, I mean, I do the pirate thing 9 months out of the year with the Shadow Players. So, you know, we're traveling around, and I get recognized a lot. Like we do gigs up in New York and down in Florida, and I've been recognized up there by a lot of pirate fans, because, you know, pirate fans are far and wide. The Alumni Association stretches along the East Coast around the United States. So, and it's fun to be recognized by a lot of the fans, you know, and just raise a glass with those guys.
Steve, one of the things I wanted to ask you, I mean, we talked about the emotion of the players and the fans as Purple Haze. Take us back to 2009. Were there, I mean, like you said, you had a long history in theater and that sort of thing. So did you have any nerves going through the Purple Haze for the first time? And talk about your emotions.
Well, I don't know if you remember when Skip was there. It was my first year, and they were just coming off of the championship, and those guys were rocking. And remember they had the old the pirate ship back in the end zone. And that thing was it was a rickety old piece of, you know, it was sitting, and it was, and the doors on it were only held up by a couple of lag bolts, and they were really heavy doors. And I'm in this pirate ship with, you know, these 6'4", you know, 300-pound linemen, and they're ready to go, man. They're rocking that thing, and all of a sudden those doors come slamming down, and I'm walking out in the purple smoke, and at the time, I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do the pose and just do that. Just kind of come out and you know, figure out what to do. And it was a blur. And then now I'm able to appreciate, you know, and able to go out and experience, you know, everything I can do and try to make it more, you know, just get the fans riled up. And there's only so much I can do, you know, coming out of the smoke and going out of the 50-yard line and going around and coming back around and doing the hoisting the Jolly Roger. And there, you will try to add a few more things, you know, to it. But yeah, that first time, it was a blur to me. I had no idea what I was in for, and man, I'm telling you, I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's a great experience.
And Steve, Dave, before we moved on, I just Steve talked about the timing, and as far as the folks from ECU being on the headset and okay, you're on that sort of thing. So. Steve, last year I noticed something that was definitely different in the past. Once you've come out, the team has come out, but then they stood in the end zone. Last year it was straight through the band instead of standing there in the end zone, which I liked.
I did too.
It kind of built to a crescendo instead of being anticlimactic. So talk about that. And was that something that had kind of been discussed going into last year?
Yeah, I didn't really. I kind of discovered that the first game. They said, "Hey, you know, they're not gonna stand at the end of this year. They're just gonna go ahead and run straight out." And I think that was more the coach's decision. They wanted to do that and just maybe change it up a little bit. I did like the building crescendo, like you said, you know, and the fire of the cannon, and everybody comes running out. It gives me a little time also to get to the 50-yard line because, running full sprint down the 100 yards with those pirate boots on, man, it takes its toll. And that's why I start at the 50-yard line. I can let those guys pass me by the time I'm at the 10. So. But this year, we've got a few changes coming up. I haven't really been privy to a lot of the changes we're going to do. We're going to meet about that pretty soon. But, one of the big things we did have last year, I don't know if you remember the new entrance video.
Right.
Yep. That's one of the things I plan on asking you about. As far as we've had Curtis Thiemann on the show and then also, of course, another pirate down there, Jonathan Medford. I was just going to get you – I know you can't, like you just said, divulge any specifics, but talk about that process as far as, like, filming last year's video and this year, what you can say.
Let me tell you, those guys are true professionals. I mean, they come from the film background down in Wilmington. And when Curtis called me last year, man, I was like, let's do it, man, because I was ready to make that thing happen. And you know, when you saw that video, man, it was done right. I mean, we went down to a studio down there. We were in the studio for about half a day filming the indoor stuff, and then all night we were on the beach filming the rest of, where I pour the rum out onto the sand and light it up. And, man, that was a great experience, man. It was really professional. They actually won, a silver award for that video. And actually, I'll be meeting Curtis here, Friday. I'm going to have lunch with him and we're going to talk about, a new video, we're going to do, for the No Quarter. I know you talked about that, and we're going to be doing that filming at an undisclosed location here in a couple of weeks. So that's going to be exciting. So I can't wait for that. And like I said, those guys, I mean, it was like a theatrical achievement that those guys did on that video. It was amazing.
It was breathtaking, and Curtis has been on with us, and we had him recently on, and I'm sure we'll have him again after that Gardner Webb game on September 7th. One of the things that came to mind, Steve, is you and I can relate, and Bubba can relate in a different way, but certainly with theater, I always tell people, if you don't have nerves going into any kind of performance, you're lying, or if not, you're definitely, you have like no pulse, because even doing an interview with you or any kind of performance you do, you have butterflies.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's... when I'm in that tunnel, as soon as the national anthem's done, I'm geared up, and then they got the press, directly on the other side of that tunnel, with the cameras pointing straight at you, and you hear that the video start to crank up, and it's like, okay, we got 30 seconds, and they're counting it down, and I'm just, man, I'm ready to go. I'm like a lion getting ready to release out of the cage. And it's like I said, I never, that feeling never goes away. I'm a little bit more relaxed now, but I still get those butterflies and just the anticipation of coming out on that field. And like I said, I hope to be doing it for another 10 years, and I can, one of those roles I can grow into as an old crusty pirate. And I'm trying to change up a little bit, the costume, and we call it garb in the pirate world, but I'm just coming off of another I just had another shoulder surgery, so with a lot of the sword fighting over the years, my head and my rotator cuff made a major tear last year, and then I tore it again in December, so I'm recovering now from that from my right shoulder surgery, so I hope to be able to swing that sword around my head a little bit more this year. So we'll see.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Steve, as far as coming out of that tunnel, has there been any kind of funny exchanges between you and the pirate players? Because we've had some characters over the years, especially in the last decade or more. Have there been anything funny they've said to you or you've said to them?
I try to be respectful of those guys because that's a good point, because I'm usually there in the front and they're behind me. I'll turn behind me and say, let's go get them, guys. But I mean, they're focused, man. And they've got usually the ones that are directly behind me are the ones that carry the flags and the banners and things like that. And they're jumping up and down, ready to go. And, And I try not to, have them lose focus when I'm in the locker room with them. I'll say hello to them. They'll say hello to me, and maybe, once or twice get a picture or something. But I'm usually respectful of the coach and the players inside the I let them have their time to get ready, because the least, the last thing they need to do before they go on the field is start talking to me. But I remember the last the senior game last year, a lot of the outgoing players, I'd shake their hand and congratulate those guys on a fine season and wherever they're going after that. But, I try to stay focused in the tunnel. I know, once we get out on that field, I remember back in the, I think it was 2010 or 11, the SMU game, where the SMU players were, standing in our end zone at the other end of the field, and they hadn't left the end zone yet. And I was running down the field with a bunch of the players, and these guys, they weren't moving. And we just had to barrel through them. And I had and I was the first one, out there, and I'm running towards these SMU players, and they're standing their ground. And right at that time, a bunch of these ECU players passed me up, and thank God they were there, because I don't know what would have happened if I would have tried to barrel through these SMU players at the end zone. So, and that was kind of a cool little effect. Who knows what would happen if we were having an altercation, make national news with the Pirate mascot taking on SMU players. So.
It's like a pirate taking on a Mustang, right?
Exactly, right. There you go. And I had, the thing about it is I'm running down with a sword in my hand, too. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm not padded up, but I got a sword in my hand, so I'm pretty protected. So, but since then, a lot of players, and the opposing teams have been pretty respectful. So I haven't had any altercations since then. But who knows? It's a new year, so
no question about it.
Now, Steve, I'm trying to think back. Have you gone to any of the bowl games that the Pirates have played in since you've come on board?
That's a good question. I'd love to go to a bowl game. I haven't never been to one. I haven't been invited, but since it is a neutral site, the only game that I went to that was a neutral game was back in 2011, I believe. We did the South Carolina game, and we played at Panther Stadium, and I got to do the entrance out there, which was really cool. That was a neat experience because, Panther Stadium's huge, and it's funny because it doesn't seem that much bigger on the field, because literally the stands are right up to the field, right at the end zone, and at Dowdy Ficklin, the pretty deep end zone, so you don't get that perspective. But that was the only time I was able to do the entrance at a neutral site. I'd love to travel with them, man. If the new coach will let me come out and we can do our entrance, that'd be great. We'll go to a bowl game this year, hopefully, and we'll see what happens.
I'll tell you what, Steve, I'll talk to the folks over at ECU, because if that's what it takes to get to a bowl game, we'll have Steve the Pirate right out there at every bowl game.
Instead of, hey, I'm ready to go, man. Well, I live in Raleigh, and everybody's like, are you going to go to the state game this year? And I'm like, well, if I'm invited, I might go. And they're like, you got to dress out? And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to go up, but I don't want any confrontations, but I'll always go and tailgate. So we'll see what happens, And like I said, they don't want me to be too visible. They want it to be kind of like an enigma kind of thing, and I understand that. Just come out, make an appearance, hit the field, and do the kickoff, and then I'm back inside. So, and I don't mind that at all. It's great. Like I said, it's a great experience to be doing that. But anything I can do for those marketing guys, I'd love to do it. I've been asked to do the inaugural game for the women's lacrosse last year. And unfortunately, I had just come off my shoulder surgery, so I wasn't able to do it. But I'd love to do basketball games or baseball games or whatever they need me to do, man. I'll be there for them.
One thing that came to mind, Steve, is being acting background. People don't realize I have. This was a job. I started in 1985 doing community theater. So what, 34 years or something like that? I could maybe have retired by now. My son asked me yesterday. He said, are you finished? He meant retired. He told me yesterday he wants me to be retired so I can stay with him all the time. But anyway, yeah. I was going to make a point about stage combat. We had like a workshop years ago at the North Carolina Theater Conference, right there at the North Carolina School of the Arts. And I'll never forget how difficult stage combat. Can you just give people a little bit of idea about the sword fighting and that kind of stuff? It really is a lot harder to do stage combat than if you were actually doing it for real.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, I work as a fight choreographer in Raleigh, and I teach stage combat classes. So, but basically, the fight director, his job is to make sure any kind of violence on stage is safe to do. And I specialize in sword play. So that's what the shadow players do when we do our shows out in the public. You know, it's live, and as opposed to being on film, you can't just say, okay, cut, we're going to do it from a different angle, and then go from there. You've got to do it live. You've got to do it with real blades, and most of the time you don't have any, you know, body armor protection. It's all done, you know, without face masks or anything. So we practice about 40 to 50 hours for 1 minute of choreography.
Wow.
But we've been doing this for over 20 years, so usually our fights, you know, we know them like the back of your hand, but you've got to make it look spontaneous is the key. You can't make it look as if it's just going to be, you know, as if you're doing it, you know, blindfolded. So you've got to be able to act the fight as well as make it look historic and real. You know, like you're doing a Shakespeare production, you've got to know exactly what type of weapons you're doing and be cognizant of your partner's safety, you know, because when you're fighting, it's not really your opponent, that's your partner on stage, and you've got to make it, you've got to really sell it. So, safety first is the key. And, you know, we do these shows, you know, they're 30-minute shows that are continuous, you know, so we got to be able to keep your stamina. It's great exercise, you know, but it's the best. I mean, for an actor to be able to go out there and be physical as well as being entertaining is a thrill. It really is. So, fight choreography. It's, and if you've ever seen us shadow players, you know, come out and see us. Actually, I'm going to plug our next gig is actually Beaufort Pirate Invasion coming up, in August. So we'll be there at the 9th, 10th, and 11th of August down in Beaufort. And then I'm hosting one here in Raleigh on September 7th or September 14th, the second annual City of Oaks Pirate Festival, and we're going to host a bunch of pirates around the East Coast coming in here. So, if you want to see us fighting live, come and see us in August and September, man. It's have you ever been down to Beaufort?
I have. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. If you need to come down there and see the invasion. We do 3 days of just, you know, pirate music and fighting and cannon firing. We do black powder demonstrations. I've actually got a cannon that I use. So, and that's another thing. I'd love to be able to fire some black powder on the field, but they don't want to do that. So, and black powder can be kind of temperamental too. You know, if it doesn't shoot the first time, you can't, you know, stand there and try to reload. So, I'll let the ROTC guys do that. Handle that with the cannon. So.
Yeah, well, I just want to tell you, we got breaking news. The female listens are spiking right now, Steve. So I just want to let you know, I was just handed a piece of paper. Well, Steve, I tell you what, man, I appreciate the time because what a treat to have you on, and I hope you'll come back on. And I tell you what, down the line, we'd love to have you come with one of our live events and where people could get maybe autographs or take pictures with you.
Hey, just let me know. When is your next live event? I'll be there. You know, as long as it's you know, on maybe on a weekend or at night, I can. At least I live in Raleigh, so I'm only like an hour and a half away from Greenville. But yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I mean, I've been wanting to get on with you guys for a while and start this season back up. And it's like I said, it's the best job in the world, and I got the best fans. We got the best fans in the world, man.
Do you have social media that people could find you?
Yeah, dude, actually, I'm on Facebook, Steve Wetzel, and also the Shadow Players are at ShadowCombatNC.com, and we're also on Facebook. And like I said, we're pirates for hire, man. We'll come out and do corporate events, and I've done a couple of weddings, and giving the bride away and some other things. It's a lot of fun, but like I said, we're for hire, you know, 9 months out of the year, so look us up, man.
All right, sounds good. Steve, we appreciate the time, and certainly we're looking forward to a great season under new head coach Mike Houston. And as always, we'd like to end interview, especially this case. Go Pirates.
Go Pirates. All right, we'll see you guys soon, and have a great season. Take care.
Thanks so much, Steve. We really appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to catching up again down the road. It was interesting to hear some of his stories from behind the scene, like the time where he had the sword in the ground, and the smoke was so bad that he could not get the sword out of the ground, and Coach Ruff tripped on it. I think that was in 2012.
Yeah, I remember that. I didn't get to take, you know, but by the way, just to stroke my own ego here, and for anybody who's curious, a lot of these interviews are recorded while I'm working. So I miss a lot of them. So, you know, I have no idea what you guys talked to Steve about, but, I do remember that incident where the sword got stuck in the crown and Ruff almost tripped over it. I remember that well.
Something else that really stood out to me about the interview, in addition to leading the Pirates out onto the field on game days, and then Steve goes to Free Boot Friday, Pirate Fest, and then other pirate festivals up and down the East Coast. And he said a lot of times he'll be up in New York City or places well removed from Greenville, and then Pirate fans or other college athletics or football fans would notice him as leading the Pirates onto the field.
Yeah, I mean, he does a good job doing it. I've jokingly said many times that, you know, when he comes out in his Pirate get up, and I do not mean this as an insult, this is just a joke. And lots of times when I see him, I'm not sure if my wife should go stick a dollar in his pants there, or if I should see if he needed a tag partner at the local indie show for wrestling. he's definitely somebody that takes care of himself. Good looking dude, represents East Carolina well, and the ladies certainly love him.
Kind of shifting gears, let's take a look. Let's move back to football, and we'll talk about the AAC media poll. We'll start off on the East, since that's what the Pirates are in. You have UCF projected to win the division, which is no surprise, but you also had Cincinnati getting 11 first place votes. So a lot of respect to the Bearcats and as they enter year three of Luke Fickell, and that's certainly much deserved, and they have a lot coming back, so that really wasn't that much of a surprise.
11-win season last year.
Yeah, and I still for the life of me can't figure out why they're over under for five dimes or whichever one of the booking agents or what have you, why they had them at 5.5, and that's just mind-boggling. And then you had in fourth place third place USF, Temple in fourth, and with new head coach Rod Carey from Northern Illinois coming in.
I would flip those, even with Rod Carey in his first year. I just wouldn't impress myself for it last year. As of right now, I would flip those.
Yeah, you certainly couldn't argue with that, and I would imagine that that's probably the main reason that they're 3-4 with USF ahead of Temple is because of that coaching change. Because USF, like you said, certainly has a lot of questions, and Charlie Strong and his staff, a lot of new pieces on the staff. They have a lot to prove going into this season down in Tampa. A lot of question marks, I think, when they lost their last six games last year, something like that. In fifth place, and you have ECU, no surprise there. And based on what we've done or not done in the last three seasons.
Yeah, I don't know how you could possibly pick us any higher. I think we can finish higher, but I don't see how anybody could expect us to be picked higher.
And then, of course, rounding out things in the East Division, you have Randy Edsel and the UConn Huskies, who are entering their final year in the conference.
Correct.
Shifting over to the West, I was a little surprised. Obviously, you expected Memphis to be on top, which they were, but while you certainly expect big things out of the Houston Cougars under Dana Holgorsen, they received 14 out of the 30 first place votes, which was a little surprising that it wasn't a little bit more in Memphis's favor. What did you think?
It doesn't surprise me. Dana Holgorsen is a big name. Houston, you know, has got a good program, so it doesn't surprise me. But Memphis picked to win at Houston second, and it I get what you're saying, that you're surprised it was that close, but it really doesn't surprise me, honestly.
And having said that, I certainly, with Derek King and everything that Dana Holgorsen brings to the table, I would not be surprised at all if Houston ends up winning it. But just going into it with a proven coach and a proven quarterback at Memphis, and some people actually, I've seen a handful of people projecting Memphis as, I think it was Phil Steele even, that had Memphis as top group of five team.
He does. He has them as the New Year's Six representative for the group of five.
And that's kind of where I was coming from. But after Memphis and Houston, you have Tulane, Willie Fritz doing such a tremendous job down there in New Orleans, and going to a bowl and then winning that bowl last year, the Cure Bowl. And then you have SMU in fourth place. But oddly enough, the Mustangs, who certainly are not absent of talent, the Mustangs have one first place vote.
Yeah, that's got to be somebody from the Dallas media, I would think.
Actually, I kind of reading between the lines, and I saw a little correspondence between Ronnie Woodward and Stephen Igo on Twitter. I think it may have been Ronnie Woodward that from the Daily Reflector that picked the Mustangs to win the West.
Really? Wow.
I don't know all of his logic, but I know he just historically likes to go against the grain and pick Sonny Dykes Club to win it.
Yeah, Sonny Dykes is a good coach, but that is definitely going against the grain.
And then rounding out the West, you have Navy and Tulsa. Navy, you certainly...
Yeah, Navy, you don't know what you're going to get. They could bounce back. I wouldn't be surprised if they bounce back and finish in the top three.
Yeah, neither would I.
So I kind of hope that projection is right, because we got them early. It'd be nice to go up there and have a chance to win that game.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me at all if that projection is way off.
And then at Tulsa, you have Coach Montgomery, who's who really needs a solid season if he's going to retain his job.
Yeah, you got to put Tulsa last in the West. I'm going to hush your tick. But like you said, Montgomery's going to have a good year to save his job down there in Tulsa.
Another note concerning this is just about East Carolina football, and you had Alex Turner representing the Pirates along with DeAndre Ferrier accompanying Mike Houston up to Newport, Rhode Island for the AAC Media Days. And then I think it was today or maybe it was yesterday on Tuesday, Alex Turner was recognized as one of 137 players from across the nation as a member of the All-State the watch list for the All-State ASCA Good Works team. So Alex Turner, he's a model as far as what you want out of a player in terms of on the field, in the classroom, and in the community.
Absolutely, and congratulations to him on being recognized.
I tell you, Kyle, right now, we'll come back and talk a little bit more, but let's go ahead and get to our second guest. Last summer, we enjoyed catching up with ECU alum and longtime sports writer Ron Clements. So let's go catch up with Ron right now and talk about the Home Run on Wheels initiative and what that's about, and then we'll also talk some other things with Ron, and let's chat with him right now.
Well, with summertime, there's lots to talk about with baseball, and obviously we could even talk some NASCAR. We won't do that right now, but certainly football is in the mix as well. And, Bubba, we've got a very special guest.
Yeah, very excited to catch up with this guy for the first time in a year. We talked to him last summer, and he has an awful lot going on. He's a Pirate, a veteran sports writer, Ron Clements. Ron, welcome into the show.
Thanks, Bubba. Thanks, Dave.
Glad to have you on, and certainly what a difference a year makes. A lot of good things going on, and certainly I know that you have a lot on your plate. We'll be talking about that in just a second. We got a really cool thing that we talked about last year, I guess year number two. But before we do that, I just want to get your take as an ECU alum. Are you excited of having Mike Houston as coach at East Carolina?
I am. Obviously, he had a lot of success at James Madison, and
beat ECU at while at James Madison. So he's got, I think he knows what he's walking into. And you saw that from like his first practices where he was like, he pretty much called out the team for being soft and not putting in the work. So I hope he can return this team to what it was, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's one of those things, Ron. Like you said, Coach Houston is going to tell you how it is. And there are certain things like the offensive line that he said he's actually pleasantly surprised with the amount of talent that was there. But like you said, those practice habits and just the lack of physicality was even worse than he had anticipated.
Yeah, and if ECU wants to return to, you know, winning 8 to 10 games every year, they need to get better on both sides of the ball in the trenches. I mean, it's going to start with the 300-pound guys and on offense and defense. That's where ECU has been pushed around. Every time I see ECU the football Twitter account retweet, you know, that this player has committed and it's a quarterback or a wide receiver or a running back, I'm just like, well, that's great, but that's not where they need help. Show me the 4-star, you know, defensive lineman who's going to be coming in.
Yep, need some more Linville Joseph, C.J. Wilson, Scotty Robinson, and those sorts of guys.
Jay Ross, yeah.
Yep, Jay Ross.
Yeah, it's funny when back in 2008 and 2009 when they had Ross, Joseph, and Wilson. I mean, all three of those guys won a Super Bowl within their first 2 years in the NFL. And, you know, the talent was there 10 years ago. Hopefully they can get it back.
And that's one of the things, I know we're going to dive into other topics, but while we're on East Carolina football, obviously the AAC media days are going on right now up in Newport, Rhode Island. And one of the things that I saw, I believe it was Ronnie Woodward of the Daily Reflector tweet out late last night, was one of the or the depth chart for ECU going into fall camp. And as you looked at the two deep on the defensive line, there were only three guys that were heavier than 245 pounds, which is something that was pretty alarming.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, it's nice to be quick on the D-line, but if they want to beat the likes of Virginia Tech and well, although they're not going to be playing Virginia Tech in you know, anytime soon. But if they want to beat ACC schools or SEC schools or even Big Ten schools or, you know, whatever, anybody from the quote-unquote Power Five, yeah, you got to have some 280, 290, 300-pound guys on the defensive side of the ball.
And, Ron, another thing that comes to mind, too, is you'll appreciate this being a member of the media. I'm able to go to practice, and I'll tell you one thing. I know it's spring practice, and they're not showing us everything, but covering a Montgomery practice last year and covering a Houston practice this year, it's old school, baby. You know, I put this on the podcast because it's literally, I think Montgomery was doing more of a pro style practice. And with Houston, he's like, good on good. You know, we're going to get at it. If you take the guy's head off in practice, so be it. Because you, I mean, that's the one thing I don't understand that the previous administration didn't get was the very fact that you play like you practice. So when those guys are not hitting the way they're supposed to be hitting, and I'm not saying full contact all the time because you got to protect the guys, but it comes a point where that was the thing that was missing for me with the big time with Montgomery was the practice stuff. It was just kind of like not walkthroughs, but it was kind of like just going through the motions. So those guys, that's why they're getting beat, because they're not wrapping up. They're kind of like halfway doing things, and it showed on game day.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm a little misguided here, but I've been at several practices, and I've been watching football my whole life. And it seems like on the pro and college level, tackling has just gone by the wayside pretty much. And I think it's because nobody ever wants a player to get injured in practice, but you have to work on it. You have to work on fundamentals and wrapping up and tackling and being good tacklers. And you need to be physical during practice in order to do that. And I think not just poor tackling technique when you get to game day, but in the NFL, I think a lot of these soft tissue injuries are because guys aren't getting, you know, toughened up, for lack of a better term, during practice. So when they get hit, their body's not used to it, and they get injured. I think that's why you've seen a rise in the injuries in both the college and pro level. And, you know, maybe I'm misguided here, but, you know, I've never played beyond high school football. But, you know, I just – that's just, you know, my opinion on why you sometimes you see a guy with a nagging muscle injury, because it's, you know, he's not getting that seasoned, you know, toughness basically during practice.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, no doubt about it. Ron, you have an awful lot going on. We mentioned in the open about how last year when we talked to you right around this time, you had the Home Run on Wheels initiative. So take us a little, take us into that venture. And I know last year you visited 38 states and also Canada. So talk about how things have gone this year.
Well, we're up to 44 states now. We added Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, and West Virginia so far this year. We're still continuing our charity mission with foster care. Last year, we were able to get kids out to games in Miami, Greensboro, and Durham, because we worked with Children's Hope Alliance there in North Carolina, but also Detroit, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Denver, and St. Louis. I think when I talked to you last year, we had just left Denver, and which was really exciting because one of the foster kids got a home run ball last July 11th at Coors Field, and it was hit by Herman Marquez, the pitcher,
yeah.
And that makes it even more unique to this kid. But then we ended on a high note. We got some kids out to two different games in St. Louis last September. But here in Pittsburgh, my book, the Home Run on Wheels book, should be out this week. I have a book signing scheduled on Saturday, the 20th. Hopefully that'll go well. But what we're really excited about is Monday, the 22nd, the Pittsburgh Pirates have donated 200 tickets to Bethany Christian Services for that game. And to put that into perspective, with the six Major League Baseball teams we got tickets from last year, the most we got was 50 from the Brewers. So for the Pirates to donate 200 is just, I mean, above and beyond anything we could have ever expected. And it's incredible. And we cannot thank the Pirates enough. And I know the kids at Bethany Christian Services are going to have a really good time Monday. It's kind of, you know, I mean, this is against a division rival in the NL Central, super, super tight. It may be a division of mediocrity this year where everybody just kind of hanging around 500, but everybody's within 5.5 games of the Cubs in first place.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about that. I know Bubba told me that before we started the interview, and it's amazing with that's one of the exciting things about baseball is when you get in these this time of year, you get after the All-Star break, and now you're in the situation now where it's kind of it's getting to be do or die, right? And certainly, how do you feel? I know you're biased, but how do you feel about your Brewers? Do you think they got what it takes to catch up with the Cubs?
I hope so. Last year, they kind of did this thing where they had a lull before and then after the All-Star break. I think they lost like 8 straight around the All-Star break last year, but then they ended up coming back and having the best record in the National League. So Milwaukee needs pitching. The trade deadline is coming up. I know Madison Bumgarner is a name that's been thrown around for several teams. I don't know what he's got left in the tank, but yeah, the Brewers need something because right now they're 2.5 back of the Cubs, and the Cardinals have caught the Brewers. I don't know. The Cubs actually just made a trade. They got Martin Maldonado from the Royals, so they got another bat in their lineup. The Cubs are making moves. The Brewers need to, and I'm sure the Cardinals are thinking the same way. It's funny, being here in Pittsburgh, you listen to sports talk radio, and they're saying, well, the Pirates are done. They're 5 games under 500. They need to trade Corey Dickerson and to get some pitching, to get some young pitching. They need to trade Starling Marte because he's got a big contract year coming up next year. And it's like, so I think some Pittsburgh media folks are think the Pirates are done, but the Pirates are tied with the Reds in last place, but both those teams are only 5.5 games out of first. So
it's really funny you mentioned about the NL with that Central. It's funny because all those teams you think about have history, deep history. When you think about, you think about Pittsburgh, you were talking about Cincinnati. I mean, oh my gosh, when you think about St. Louis, then your team with the Brewers, there's a lot of great baseball there in the NL Central, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Reds are the oldest team in baseball, or you know, the oldest continuous franchise. And, you know, the Cubs, I mean, you know, the lovable losers for so long, and then they finally win it all in 2016. But, no other division is so tight. I mean, the Dodgers have a 15-game lead. They're just running away with the NL West. The Braves, 7.5 games in the NL East. The Astros have a 5.5 game lead in the AL West. The Twins have a 6-game lead on the Cubs, on the Indians in the Central. And the Yankees have a 5-game lead on second-place Tampa Bay in the AL East. So from first place to second place in every other division is almost as big of a margin or more than what the NL Central has from first place to last place. It's kind of incredible.
Ron, I wanted to get your thoughts on, I know with the commissioner, he mentioned a couple years ago at the All-Star game that they're looking to the issues they have to face right now in the immediate future is with the ballparks. There's a two-part question here. I want to get your thoughts on how do you solve the problems as far as the ballparks in Tampa Bay and Oakland. And also, he mentioned there were three cities that they were looking at as potential future expansion sites. Montreal has been, it looks like they're going to get another franchise. Obviously, they moved to D.C. and become the Nationals. But they're averaging 45,000 at exhibition games in Montreal over the last handful of years. And then he also mentioned Charlotte and Mexico City. Do you think my dream will finally come true to get a baseball team, a Major League Baseball team in North Carolina?
I do not. I think, let's say the Rays actually stay put and they don't move to Montreal, and they get their new stadium with a retractable roof in Ybor City or in Tampa. And I think the A's will get their stadium stuff worked out. I don't think it should be down on the by the Oakland port. The A's, right where the Coliseum is right now, they have so much land out there to build. And the Warriors are moving to San Francisco, so they can demolish Oracle Arena and build a new stadium there for the A's. The A's have so much land out there, and it's really easy to get through the train system out there. The BART goes right to the Coliseum. So if I'm the A's, I stay where I'm at instead of trying to negotiate a deal to be on the water. It just doesn't make any sense. It's not worth it. But I think if and when Major League Baseball expands, Montreal will get a team for sure. That's going to happen. I think Nashville probably makes the most sense in terms of a market. They've got a AAA team now with the Sounds. It's a Rangers affiliate. But they also already have the NFL and the NHL. Nashville's not going to get an NBA team because they got the Grizzlies down the road in Memphis. But I think Nashville and Montreal are the two cities that make the most sense if baseball expands to 32.
Ron, I have a question I wanted to ask you, but before I ask the question I had, you kind of created a natural segue for me on talking about the Nashville Sounds. I was watching your video within the last couple of days of that ballpark. Very unique scoreboard with the guitar.
That's a cool scoreboard, yeah.
And then you also you had a very cool area that has putt-putt, cornhole, and other things. And then, in addition to the ballpark, you also have Seth Maness, a former East Carolina pitcher, who was with the Nashville Sounds last time I checked. So can you talk about the ballpark itself, and then also, did you have a chance to see Seth Maness?
I did not. I interviewed someone with the Sounds, Zach Curtis, one of their pitchers, and I tried to get Maness, but it didn't work out, and then I wasn't able to, go see him. We weren't we couldn't really get down to the bullpen area to, like, really, you know, try to, like, yell at him and talk to him. Or, and it, I, honestly, it just would have been weird if I would have done that anyway. But, I did want to see Maness. He did not pitch the night we were there. I remember being in St. Louis when he was with the Cardinals, and it was cool to see him play while I was living there in St. Louis. And I hope Maness does well. It's funny, when we were in Charleston, West Virginia, we went to a West Virginia Power game, that's single A, and talked to a guy who went to Michigan, Brian Paul, but the Michigan coach, obviously Michigan had a really good run in the NCAA baseball tournament. And so Brian talked a little bit about that and talked about playing for former ECU baseball player. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but Sekich.
Yeah, well, we actually had Michigan head coach Eric Backich on the show here in the last couple weeks.
And Brian said Coach Backich talked a lot about what Keith LeClair meant to him and what he learned from Coach LeClair before, you know, he passed. So that was kind of neat to get that East Carolina tie in when I'm in West Virginia talking to a guy who played baseball at Michigan.
That really
and
is.
I really wish the ECU baseball team could have got to Omaha. I thought this was going to be the year they finally got to Omaha, but they just ran into a bus up in Louisville, and it's kind of funny though because my wife went to college at Illinois State, so had Illinois State beat Louisville in that regional, and they took them to what? I think Louisville needed a walk-off win to advance to the Super Regional. But had Illinois State beat Louisville, it would have been Illinois State at ECU. So my wife and I would have had a little, you know, household rivalry there for a bit. But that did not come to pass.
Hey, Bubba can tell you that I told everybody to watch out for Illinois State. Did I not, Bubba?
Dave was just throwing out a random team. Yeah, not to rain on Dave's parade, but and there may have been more to that than I thought, but I think we were talking about whatever issue or scenario, I guess, potential.
Yeah.
That was even before the brackets came out. That was the funny thing about it, I think. And Dave just said, okay, what if it's Illinois State? And then it nearly was Illinois State. I was like, oh, my gosh. But, so good it was scary. But
Dave, did you buy a lottery ticket that week?
No, I should have. You're right. I hadn't thought about that. I should have.
But no, Ron, the question that I had for you here, about a week from now, my parents and I, or my dad, and it's probably going to be an all-guys trip with my son, my nephew, and then my brother-in-law. We're going to go down to SunTrust Park in Atlanta. It's going to be my first time there. So what can you tell me from a selfish perspective, and maybe some of our listeners who love the Braves but haven't been there, what are some of the things that we need to check out?
Well, get there early. If the game's at 7, show up at 5 and take in the battery. Because, like, when we were walking up to that, I said walking through the battery felt like walking down Main Street USA at Disney World. There is so much there with shops and restaurants and bars. So get there early, pick up a couple souvenirs, get something to eat before you go into the ballpark. And then SunTrust Park itself is really, really cool. They've got a nice area called Monument Garden where there's a big Hank Aaron statue. And they've got the bats and gloves of, like, every Hall of Famer who played for the Braves.
Oh, wow.
A nice tribute to the 95 World Championship team. So, go to Monument Garden for sure. That's definitely a must-see. But my advice is get there early so you can, you know, kind of enjoy everything. And then just sit down in your seats and enjoy the game. SunTrust Park, really not a bad seat in the place. We walked all around that stadium when we were there last April of last year. That's a great park.
And, Ron, something else, while we're there in Atlanta for those couple of days, we're going to see those two games against the Kansas City Royals. But during the day on Wednesday, we're going to go and check out the College Football Hall of Fame. Have you been there?
I have not. That's on my bucket list of things. In fact, I told my wife, my wife really couldn't care less about college athletics. But I told her, hey, look, you don't need to go with me, but when we go to Atlanta later this year, I want to go to the College Football Hall of Fame. And she goes, have fun. But that's definitely on my list. I think I've seen pictures, and one of the coolest things I have there is they have helmets from like every NCAA football program, from like Division I to Division III. Well,
and
that's something I definitely really want to see.
I wanted to ask you about, as far as pros are concerned, there are a lot of people that I know we cover a lot of college stuff, and certainly East Carolina a lot, but is there any storylines for the NFL that you're seeing going in? I know that it's summertime and we've got the camps coming up and all that, but training camp. But is there anything you're seeing right now early on that maybe it's a precursor for 2019 with the NFL?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Carson Wentz does and how the Eagles do, because, you know, now, I mean, it's, you know, they had Nick Foles the last couple of years, you know, and obviously that worked out with them with the Super Bowl. But now it's Wentz and only Wentz, essentially. So, he actually took the brace off his knee. He said he feels comfortable enough to do that. So, I really like Carson Wentz a lot, but I think that's probably one of the biggest storylines in the NFL this year is if Carson Wentz can play all 16 games this year. I will actually be at Redskins training camp here in about 3 weeks. And I know one thing that had to make them nervous was seeing Josh Norman jump over a pole in Spain. That must have freaked out everybody there in the front office.
I missed that. Oh, my God, he was there? Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was in a bullfighting ring, and he literally leapt over a bull.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I wonder if there anything in those NFL contracts that prohibits you from doing the running of the bulls.
Well, if there isn't now, there probably will be in future contracts.
Oh, God.
I didn't know that. Yeah, my question was, I saw this morning, I'm a Redskin fan, I saw this morning that Alex Smith got that brace kind of thing. He finally got it off, but man, he's got, even though he finally got it off.
Uphill climb for him.
Yeah, a huge climb. And my question would be, my storyline is, can the Redskins keep a quarterback healthy this year?
That's a good question. I mean, who do they have? They got, like, Case Keenum and Colt McCoy, right?
Yeah, they have those two, and of course they Haskins. They signed him.
Oh yeah, Dwayne Haskins. Yeah, I'm about that. I think Haskins probably ends the season as a starter. I think Case Keenum will begin the season. He'll start Week One, but I would not be surprised if Dwayne Haskins is the quarterback in week 16.
I agree with you.
Obviously, a lot of our listeners love the Carolina Panthers, and here later on this month, we're going to be catching up with their longtime play-by-play man, Mick Mixon. So how do you see things shaping up for the Panthers this year?
Well, it all starts with number one. I mean, if Cam Newton can be healthy, I mean, we saw what a healthy Cam Newton can do in 2015. He hasn't been right with his shoulder the last couple of years, but Cam Newton is on a Hall of Fame path. And if he can stay healthy, the Panthers should be considered one of the contenders in not just in the NFC South, but in the NFC.
It feels good. I tell you what, I started out before, I've mentioned this many times, but the NFL has a deep place in my heart. And thank God that I've moved to Eastern North Carolina, to Williamston, where I could go to an East Carolina game and start loving college football as much as I love the NFL. But it's going to be really interesting. And then, of course, it won't be long, Ron, and we have a handful of weeks, and high school football will be starting all across the country. So all three levels for me are huge. And I know Bubba knows that, like, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if I could, I probably would have, like, 5,000 TVs around and trying to keep up with even high school. But that's my only thing, is that when I go to sports bars and different places like that where there's tons of TVs, it's almost like ADD theater. I have trouble focusing on one game. I'm always looking around, and I don't know, multiple TVs may not be good for my man cave.
Well, NFL Red Zone Channel is awesome, and I think ESPN does, the college game day whip around or something,
yeah,
like that, whatever they call it. those things are awesome. I think ESPN takes commercial breaks, whereas NFL Red Zone does not, which makes NFL Red Zone like crack for a football fan.
I mean, if
you're sitting there eating and drinking, you know, whatever you're drinking, you could be just pounding water all day. You don't have to be drinking beer, but, you know, nature is going to call at some point, and it's like, I don't want to miss anything, but yet you still have to run to the bathroom.
It's like one of the best inventions ever when you're trying to keep up with that. And one thing that I know Bubba and Kyle don't get involved in, and I try to, is the fantasy stuff. And if you have the Red Zone, it's great because you can see how your players are doing.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I actually stopped playing fantasy football a couple years ago, and I was a little – I was kind of curious if I was going to miss it that first year not doing fantasy football, because I played fantasy football for like 20 years, but I honestly have not missed it. Now, I've been doing this baseball thing, you know, for, you know, the second year now, but 2017, though, was the first year in 20 years I did not play fantasy football, and I did not miss it at all in 2017. I was able to focus on work that season and just covering the NFL, and I didn't have to worry about my fantasy football team. Guys in the office talked about their fantasy teams, but I was just like, hey guys, shut up.
Well, the problem I have is, especially with the day-to-day stuff, it's almost like a part-time, even maybe some people could take it to a full-time job level of trying to trade players, move people around, cut players. Oh God, that's right, my quarterback's injured, so I've got to put my quarterback in, or
right,
you don't have the numbers of this quarterback, or should I get rid of this defense? There's so many questions in NFL.
Well, baseball is I did fantasy baseball one time, and I would never do it again, because it is basically like a full-time job, because you got guys going on like the 10-day DL, and then they're coming off, and it's there's so much to keep track of if you've got guys on a fantasy baseball team. It's like I said, it's like a second job. And yeah, I did fantasy baseball one year, and I would never do it again. I don't know how people do it, especially if they're trying to manage multiple teams.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. The person that could handle it is my broadcast partner right now, and that would be Bubba Rosenbaum, because he has the attention to detail.
Yeah, I think if I really focused on it, I could do it well, Dave, but it's funny you say that, because I was actually just about to chime in that I did it a couple of seasons with Steven Igo and maybe Cliff and some of those guys, you know, down east, and it was probably an 8 to 10 team league, maybe more. And I came in near the bottom both times just because, like Ron said, life happened and I didn't have time to devote to everything that you need to as far as setting your lineup and making moves and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's a different thing. Ron, I wanted to ask you about your book. Can we get you down here to Greenville, maybe to Barnes & Noble or somewhere where we could get you to do like a book signing?
I would consider that. We're actually going to be in South Carolina the last week of August, but maybe the first part of September. I don't know, maybe come up there, go to a Pirates game and do a book signing. That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
When you say South Carolina, to be specific, are you going to be down in Myrtle Beach? Or
Hilton Head, actually. Got a family vacation.
Okay.
Yeah, got a family vacation planned down there.
Vacation.
Both my sons are in Georgia, so it kind of makes it easier for them to get somewhere for a nice little getaway.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Well, I'll tell you what, can you talk about the charity again? I've been really, I was really impressed talking to you last year. It's an honor to have you on, obviously, again. And how can people find out about the book, about the charity, and it's nice how you're tying in baseball and foster care.
Well, start with homerunonwheels.com. Follow us on Facebook, Home Run on Wheels. You can get all the details on the book signing that I'm doing Saturday at our Facebook page. I tweet out a lot of stuff, Ron_Clements, on Twitter. And we got an Instagram account. We also have a YouTube channel that I hope people will subscribe to. So you can find us there, YouTube, Home Run on Wheels. That's where help us watch that video, the video tour of the Nashville Sound Stadium. We did one at the West Virginia Power Stadium. We did one from the Play Ballpark at the All-Star Game in Cleveland, where you can watch me embarrass myself with my dwindling baseball skills. tell you what, when I was in high school, I thought I was pretty good at baseball. But now I'm 44 and not so good.
You're right there with it. Well, we're getting better. We're getting better, certainly,
yeah.
Age and wiser for sure. Ron,
and,
man, appreciate
and then we also have a Patreon account, patreon.com/homerunonwheels. So if people want to support us, they can go there. And, you know, any kind of donations we get will go toward either clothing for foster kids or baseball tickets to get kids out to games. Right now, we're doing this thing in Pittsburgh on Monday where the Pirates donated 200 tickets. I wanted to get something lined up in Philadelphia and Baltimore, but that hasn't happened. Haven't gotten the right foster care fit. But in Washington, D.C., the Nationals have actually donated tickets to Family and Youth Initiative, as well as Lutheran Social Services National Capital Area for games on August 16th and August 18th. So, but we'd like to do something in Atlanta and St. Louis and Chicago. So, you know, any kind of support or donations at our Patreon page would go toward that.
Ron, before we let you go, I know traveling around to 44 states and such a lengthy road trip, you're bound to have had a funny story or two or more along the way. Can you share anything with us?
I don't know if it's really funny, but just kind of the frustrations of living full-time in an RV. Dry camped the other night in Clinton, Pennsylvania. We stayed at a farm, and we go to turn the water on to wash our hands or something, and our water pump went out. And it worked fine 2 weeks earlier when we dry camped in Dover, Ohio. But and we're like, what the heck? So as soon as we got here to New Stanton, Pennsylvania, which is just south of Pittsburgh, as soon as we got here, on Monday, I called the office here at the campground and said, hey, do you have a mobile RV service that comes out? They did. So the dude came out that day, actually, and he fixed our water pump. It was actually, thankfully, it was a quick, easy fix for him. It was done in like 5 minutes. You know, that's something that I'm not going to mess around with because I don't want to screw. I don't want to make anything worse. And I did kind of look at it like, what is going on? But yeah, so we did not actually shower for like 2 days because we didn't have anywhere to shower in our RV, which was frustrating. But we did use deodorant, so we didn't like stink each other out.
Appreciate it.
You know, again, I don't know if that's funny, but again, it was a little frustrating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, thank you, Ron, so much. We appreciate your time, and good luck to you. I tell you what, it's great what you're doing, and we definitely want to have you back, and hopefully we can have you back on, and we won't wait a year to have you back.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Bubba.
Thanks so much, Ron. We appreciate you coming on. Look forward to catching up with you again as we move throughout football season. He's someone that has covered the NFL for a living, for the St. Louis Rams and among others. So he's someone that who's also doing an awful lot of good along with his wife with the Home Run on Wheels initiative, and enjoyed hearing about that once again. So Kyle, now let's take a look. And did you see Alec Burleson's home run that led the USA over Japan last night?
No, I did not. I heard about it, but I did not see it.
Yeah, that was it was awesome to see. I know Burley hasn't had a ton of at bats. Really, they play so few games, and that's kind of kind of misleading. But I think I saw Burley was something like 4 out of 12 or 5 out of 12, and then he had the walk off bomb last night. So that's awesome to see Alec Burleson doing well, and then Pirates are really tearing it up in the summer leagues. I know Thomas Francisco he set the Charlottesville Tom Sox hit streak record. I think it was 18 or 19 games. So that's good to see Thomas Francisco and other Pirates doing so well in summer ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another baseball note, kind of East Carolina related. Of course, Billy Godwin led ECU from 2006. through 2014, and now he's currently a scout for the New York Yankees. Recently, Link Jarrett, who was a hitting coach at ECU under Billy Godwin, and has done a nice job at UNCG over the last several years, took the Notre Dame job. So the Spartans are looking to fill that vacancy. And from what I'm hearing, Billy Godwin is a prime candidate.
Yeah, Billy. You know, Billy's a good coach. He did good things here. Took us to regionals. Took us to a super regional. If he wants to get back into coaching and get out of scouting and coach college ball again, Greensboro could do a lot worse. Good luck to Billy if he gets the job, and that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And something else we need to talk about, I failed to mention it, and that was my mistake, and we had the bowl announcement. We plugged that earlier. This is something that that you had taken a strong look at. So Kyle, what do you think about the AAC bowl agreements that came out in the last couple of days?
I was okay with it. I was disappointed that, you know, with the ACC dropping the Detroit Bowl, I thought maybe we had a chance to get that spot against the Big Ten. The same with the Independents. The SEC and ACC are dropping their ties with the Independents, and I don't know what the hell those guys are going to do. But I thought we had a chance to get one of those, but we didn't. But what we have is fine. We have the new bowl in Boston at Fenway Park, which is going to be against the ACC. We have the Military Bowl still up in the D.C. area, in Annapolis at Navy Stadium against the ACC. We have the Armed Forces Bowl against the Big 12 and a Hawaii Bowl against the Mountain West in alternating years. And then we have four bowls in now what's going to be a pool of bowls. All these bowl games that are owned by ESPN are now falling into a pool. And the Birmingham Bowl, for example, it's not that we don't have it anymore. It's now it's part of that bowl pool. And we'll send a team to four of the ESPN-owned bowls, bowls that are in that pool are the Birmingham Bowl, the Cure Bowl, which ESPN didn't own prior to this year. So I guess they purchased that bowl. The Cure Bowl, the Birmingham Bowl, what else is in there, Bubba? The New Mexico Bowl, the Frisco Bowl down in Texas, there's another bowl that's part of that, Bubba, that's down in Texas.
It's escaping me too.
It used to be the Ticket City Bowl. It's the bowl that's played at the old Cotton Bowl Stadium.
I'm trying to recall what they call it now.
And that is against the Big Ten.
Most recently it had been called the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Right, and one time to Ticket City. The most interesting one to me is the Myrtle Beach Bowl, which was originally going to involve Conference USA, the Sun Belt, and the MAC, and now it's part of that bowl pool, so the American will have access to it, which, you know, you look at that, and, you know, now that bowl is in a great situation where they're going to have access to not only Appalachian State, Charlotte, and Old Dominion, and Georgia Southern, with the Sun Belt and the Conference USA, but now they have access to East Carolina and in the American. So, you know, potentially that stadium only holds 20,000 down there when it gets complete with expansion this year. Brooks Field is what it's called down at Coastal. But, you know, you look at that thing, Bubba, if you had an East Carolina Appalachian or an East Carolina Charlotte Bowl or a Charlotte Appalachian Bowl or an East Carolina Coastal Carolina, 20,000 things ain't going to be enough.
Yeah, talk about a tight ticket.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, East Carolina, Appalachian State, Myrtle Beach, good God. But, you know, my guess it'll be more like they're going to take one regional team and then a team from outside the area, like an East Carolina versus Western Michigan or an Appalachian versus Ohio, something like that. It's most likely they'll lean more towards. But I don't know. I'm okay with our bowl lineup. I would say some disappointments in not getting either the Independents or the the quick lane bowl in Detroit. But overall, I know some of our fans, when I say our fans, I mean American Athletic Conference fans over on the American Message Board, was disappointed that the Birmingham Bowl fell into the bowl pool instead of going to the American on a regular basis because it's against the SEC. Also, Bubba, in that bowl pool is the Boca Raton Bowl, which is now going to, I believe, feature the ACC and the SEC in alternating years on the other side of that bowl. So it's a solid lineup overall.
Yeah, and I know a longtime sports writer, Bob Ryan, who we hope to have on the show at some point. Haven't been able to work out our schedules yet to get those to coordinate, but I know he's agreed to come on. And I know he put something out there on Twitter several weeks back when it was announced that that Fenway was going to be hosting a bowl game. And he was just something sarcastic about who cares about watching the AAC team play the ACC in Fenway in December, and that wasn't surprising, but from our perspective, and also just loving baseball and loving Fenway Park, I've always wanted to go to Fenway, and that would be awesome to see the Pirates play Boston College or whoever at Fenway Park.
Yeah, no, it's a nice bowl to me. I look at it and compare it to the Pinstripe Bowl up at Yankee Stadium. Playing in Fenway against an ACC school is appealing to me. It's an appealing matchup. It's an appealing stadium. Yeah, it's going to be very cold in Boston in December, but it'd be a lot of fun. You know, you have an 8 or 9 win in East Carolina, wanting to take on a seven win Boston College or whatever. Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun up in Fenway.
Right, and that's just kind of one of those things. It would be surreal. Like, who would ever think there'd be several thousand Pirates invading Fenway Park and getting a purple gold cheer going, not everything that it would entail. It would just be kind of a surreal setting. But if you don't have anything else, Kyle, we'll go ahead and promote some of our upcoming content and tell everybody where they can find the show and find us on social media and go ahead and wrap this thing up.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
But in the upcoming shows, that's what we're certainly going to be continuing on with our 50 Pirates in 50 Days series. We're about a week into that now. Remember, all those are on SoundCloud and YouTube, so definitely go back and check those out. They've received a tremendous response. And I know I've read on Hoist the Colors and had several folks say, great job, guys. Keep up the good work. We're really enjoying this series. So that was good to see, and that people were enjoying those interviews. But some of the non-50 Pirates in 50 Days content we have headed your way, we'll catch up with a former Pirate player from back in the Pat Dye era, and who was a longtime FBS assistant coach, defensive coordinator, Wayne Bolt. And he has stories. He was on the staff with Danny Ford at Clemson. He was, of course, with Coach Dye down in Auburn, as well as Wyoming. Prior to that, he spent time at Iowa State and Auburn with Gene Chizik. So he's hilarious, to say the least. So you're not going to want to miss the interview with Wayne Bolt. I can promise you that. In addition to Wayne Bolt, and we'll catch up, a lot of you longtime Pirate fans and just college football fans remember Rick Minner at Cincinnati, and he's the one that really got the ball rolling at Cincinnati and developed that program into a winner, because they had really struggled for years. And
what was that quarterback he had?
Gino Gadulli, is that it?
Yeah, Gadulli, yes.
Gino Gadulli. Don't ask me why I remember that, but I remember it.
Well, he seemed like he played there for 47 years.
Yeah.
He was a good quarterback, and you're right. Rick Minner was kind of the guy who made that program respectable, because it had been a doormat for years, and Rick went in there, and they were conference USA co-champions one year when Rick was there. I think people forget that. In 2002, they were co-champions with TCU.
Yep. And another name, for whatever reason, this is, doesn't have anything to do with anything other than the fact that he played at Cincinnati, and this, I don't know why I remember it. I think it's just his name. But I remember, you remember that 97 season where the Pirates were 2-5, but then we came on late, won 3 in a row, and then so we went to state 5-5 and with a chance to become bowl eligible.
Yeah, Cincinnati on the Thursday night.
Yeah, you had, you had Cincinnati in the Thursday night game in the rain, like you said, and that got us to 500. And it was a heck of a ball game. And they had, I want to say it's a wide receiver. His name was Tinker Keck. Do you remember that?
I do not.
But it was just kind of, it's just a funny name. It was like Tinker Keck. And so I remember my dad and I laughing about that. But
middle name was Bell, actually.
Yeah, Tinker Bell Keck. But we'll have to ask Rick Minner about Tinker Keck, and as well as Gino Gadulli. But and then we'll also have some other former FBS coaches coming on down the road that you won't want to miss. So some excellent content headed your way in both traditional podcasts as well as the 50 Pirates in 50 Days series. If you're listening to the show, obviously you can listen where you are right now, but you can also find us on SoundCloud and TuneIn Radio and Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts. Blog Talk Radio, you name it, you can probably find our show there. All of our podcasts for about the last month or month and a half have been on YouTube as well. So I know a lot of people, and that's easy for you to get on YouTube, and it's probably one of the more common places that people visit. So definitely listen there. And follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective, and like and follow our Facebook page, in addition to subscribing to that YouTube channel that I just mentioned. Kyle, do you have anything, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, Bob, that's pretty much it, man. We about covered it all for we've covered all news that is.
Yep, no doubt about it. We appreciate you. No doubt. Had to get Coach Houston's favorite phrase in there as we're closing this out. But we appreciate you listening. And until next time, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.